This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Impeachment number two. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, January 14th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The House has voted to impeach President Trump again, this time charging him with inciting last week's deadly rioting at the U.S. Capitol.
The president has released a video in which he urges no violence or vandalism, saying they have no place in our country or movement.
President-elect Biden today is expected to outline his plans to speed vaccinations to more people. 4,300 COVID deaths were reported yesterday.
And why this year could be an enormous one for job growth.
Yeah, so I spoke to a number of different economists, and several are predicting that U.S. employers could add, you know, 5 to even more than 6 million jobs in 2021, and that would place it as the best year for hiring on record. So basically go all the way back to World War II.
Eric Morath at the Wall Street Journal on what economists are saying about the job picture for 2021. The House has voted to impeach President Trump, alleging he encouraged a mob to storm Congress as part of an effort to overturn November's election loss to Joe Biden. It was his unprecedented second impeachment and second in 13 months. 10 Republicans joined all the Democrats in a vote of 232 to 197. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
I sadly am with a heart broken over what this means to our country. Of a president who would incite insurrection, will sign the engrossment of the article of impeachment.
Doug Malfa is a Republican congressman from Northern California.
Today, the second annual impeachment of President Trump isn't really about actual words spoken out of rally. No. This is all about, Madam Speaker, the unbridled hatred of this president.
Unlike past impeachments, there were no depositions or investigations for this one. The next step is up to the Senate, set to be split 50-50 later this month, where a two-thirds majority is required to convict Mr. Trump. Shortly after the House impeached him for inciting an insurrection against the U.S. government, President Trump issued a videotaped statement condemning the violent siege on the Capitol last week and urging his supporters not to riot again as President-elect Joe Biden prepares to take the oath of office next week.
Every American deserves to have their voice heard in a respectful and peaceful way. That is your First Amendment right. But I cannot emphasize that there must be no violence, no lawbreaking, and no vandalism of any kind.
In the video released on the White House Twitter account, Mr. Trump did not concede that he had lost to Mr. Biden or mention the president-elect by name, even as he used his strongest language yet to reject the violence carried out under his name. Security experts and law enforcement officials have warned that a number of far-right groups have threatened demonstrations or attacks in the coming week. Let's get some post-impeachment political insight from Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. Jim, how do you see it?
Certainly, a lot of Republicans were willing to stand with President Trump as he initially questioned the results of the election, and he had a number of legal challenges in multiple close battleground states, you know, pretty much with the logic that it really wasn't any different than Al Gore's challenge in the Florida 2000 recount, wasn't much different than some of the things that Hillary Clinton explored in the aftermath of the 2016 election, which she continued to sow doubt about in the context of Russian interference, even well after the fact. John Kerry, even in 2004, contemplated potentially challenging the results in Ohio, which would have, if he'd been successful, flipped the overall national results and given him a majority in the Electoral College. Now, where things got different is that Trump took it further than any of those Democrats in that even after the safe harbor date for the Electoral College, which is when all the states have to really settle on what slate of electors they're going to send to Congress. And then ultimately, when the Electoral College voted in mid-December, Trump continued trying to challenge the results and cast doubt upon the results even after that. So then finally, when a week ago, when he did the Stop the Steal rally, spoke to his supporters as Congress was getting ready to certify the Electoral College results, and then people ended up storming the Capitol, Republicans really began to lose their patience with Trump at that point, which made impeachment no longer just a sort of a partisan Democratic thing.
Yeah. Right. We're speaking with Jim Antle, politics editor at The Washington Examiner. Even earlier this week, I heard Rudy Giuliani on his radio program saying the evidence of widespread fraud is there in multiple states. Why is nobody doing anything about it? Your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly is an argument that the Trump team keeps making. They have a tendency not to really make it in court under oath. But they do make it a lot in press conferences and in speeches and in radio interviews and things like that. You know, nobody else who has looked at this has been as convinced that there's anything approaching widespread fraud. You know, maybe some irregularities. I think certainly there's an argument to be made that some of the COVID protocols and the security of mail-in ballots in different states was to the Trump campaign's disadvantage, and you know they were maybe not as strenuously checking some of these ballots. There's an argument to be made for that. Pennsylvania was certainly accepting some ballots after the statutory deadline, although those ballots did end up getting excluded. But none of this really adds up to something that would change the outcome of the election, or that is definitive enough that it would get any courts to offer them the kind of relief that they were seeking, which was essentially overturning results in multiple states. Just wasn't going to happen.
So with less than a week in office, here's the House now impeaching President Trump. Does this make political sense for those working on this?
Well, obviously, a lot of people are angry. I mean, they were the targets of the attack, and this did hurt Trump's standing in both parties, in his own party. So there is a bipartisan desire to do this. It is questionable, but honestly, it's questionable in a way for both parties. Republican voters still, by and large, are standing with Trump. So Republican elected officials breaking with him are still taking a risk.
Nice, Jim. Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday. Prosecutors say several members of the pro-Trump mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol last week have self-reported their own involvement to law enforcement. Officials are in the process of charging dozens of the most visible participants in the attack and continue to dig into what kind of planning went into it. With help from lots of cell phone photos and videos, more now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Authorities have announced the arrest of a Virginia man who was photographed on the scene wearing a sweatshirt bearing the words Camp Auschwitz. Among others arrested was a man from Idaho who was identified from photos showing him hanging by one hand from the Senate balcony. Two cops from Rocky Mountain, Virginia were also arrested. Prosecutors said Jacob Fracker and Thomas Robertson were photographed making an obscene gesture in front of a Revolutionary War statue in the Capitol. The officers are on paid administrative leave. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The new cases come as Washington and cities across the country brace for the possibility of more armed protests and violence in the days before Joe Biden's inauguration. The Wall Street Journal says the president-elect received a briefing yesterday from FBI and Secret Service officials. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump has been impeached by the House for a historic second time, charged with incitement of insurrection over the deadly mob siege of the U.S. Capitol. The House voted 232 to 197 to impeach Trump, Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts.
There are more troops right now in Washington, D.C. than in Afghanistan. And they are here to defend us against the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, and his mob.
Number two.
Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy of California.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding.
10 Republicans joined Democrats in voting for impeachment.
Number three.
While the House impeached the president, the Senate trial likely won't start until after he leaves office. The Senate is currently on a recess break and is set to reconvene Tuesday, one day before Joe Biden's inauguration. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told fellow Republicans yesterday he is undecided whether to vote to convict Trump in the pending trial. The FBI is urging local law enforcement officials to share any threat intelligence in the run-up to next week's inauguration. That message came as authorities continued to charge participants in last week's riots. Houston Police Chief Art Arcevedo says an off-duty Houston officer has been relieved of his duties for his alleged participation in the siege.
I can't tell you the anger I feel at the thought of a police officer and other police officers thinking they get to go storm the Capitol.
Acevedo says it's likely the officer will be charged by federal authorities for participating in the assault. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel has filed two charges of willful neglect of duty against former Governor Rick Snyder a day before her office is set to announce new details in the Flint water crisis investigation. Each charge is a misdemeanor. It may be too early in the morning for this. Insects are inching their way to becoming a menu item on European dining tables after food safety regulators approve mealworms as safe for human consumption. The announcement means that grubs, actually beetle larvae, could soon be ground down and used as a protein-rich flour to make pasta and bread or consumed whole in stir fries and other recipes. Bugs have long been a popular snack in parts of Asia and Latin America.
Also on TV shows I like Naked and Afraid and Dual Survival.
I was going to say, only if you need to. You need to survive somehow.
Hey, look, let's look inside this hollowed out log. Mmm, delicious. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This portion of the program is brought to you by Merrill. Merrill Edge Self-Directed helps put investing within reach. Get started at MerrillEdge.com/withinreach. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith Incorporated, registered broker-dealer, member SIPC. From the early days of the Democratic primaries to the debates between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, the 2020 presidential candidates spent a lot of time talking about housing. Jacob Passy, reporter at MarketWatch, has a look at what we can expect out of the Biden administration in terms of housing policies. Jacob, what are you hearing?
Folks across the country are concerned about the affordability of buying homes, renting homes, everything. So it's a subject that voters were interested in, and the campaigns responded in kind. But what's interesting about Biden, which the experts told me, is that he views housing, the ability to have affordable housing, as integral to his overall economic agenda, and it's not a separate issue to him. He sees it as it's not mutually exclusive. He sees it as part of, you know, every aspect basically of his, you know, plan to revitalize the country's economy, from, you know, closing the racial wealth gap to, you know, addressing the concerns related to the pandemic.
You said in the story, too, that renters could get help with high housing costs. How so?
So a number of the proposals he made as part of his broad housing plan he released earlier this year focused on reducing the cost of housing for renters. As the experts I spoke with said, you know, for years now we've had tax credits and other forms of assistance that are directed to homeowners, but there hasn't been as much directed to renters. So there's a number of policies Biden has put forward to help renters. The first being expanding funding for Section 8, so that's the voucher program that helps to subsidize rental housing for low-income families. Currently, only 1 in 4 eligible households actually receive those Section 8 vouchers because the program doesn't receive enough funding.
Oh, wow.
And so Biden has proposed expanding it so that everyone who qualifies can get a voucher. And then beyond that, he's proposed 2 tax credits that would be geared toward renters. The first would allow renters to deduct from their liability housing costs that exceed 30% of their income. So that's kind of the threshold we use to determine whether people are burdened by their housing costs, and so it would reduce that. And the second tax credit would provide a credit of up to $15,000 to cover the cost of a down payment on a home.
We're speaking with Jacob Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. His piece is called How the Biden Administration Could Reshape the Country's Housing Market. You said, too, there'd be a refocus for some agencies on fair housing.
For sure. One of the biggest changes that's occurred during the Trump administration has been a different approach to issues related to fair housing. So when we say fair housing, we're talking about discrimination in the housing market, basically discrimination on the basis of race, sexual orientation, work status, etc. So under Trump, a number of rules that were brought forth during the Obama administration, a number of regulations were rolled back or changed.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Fellas, it's 2021, the year of the rally, the one where we kick 2020 into the rearview mirror and start changing things for the better. So why not dress the part? Be the man that's always on this year with Cuts Clothing. They redesigned the simplest classics like the plain tee from the ground up, combining cutting-edge fabric technology with intelligent, minimalist design to get the next level comfort you have to wear to believe. The one that I love for winter is their new hoodie. The Hyperloop French Terry fabric they developed not only feels buttery soft like the signature Pika fabric on their shirts, but it's temperature controlled. You never have to take it off. And just like me, you won't want to. Entrepreneurs, mavericks, athletes, podcast hosts, everyone loves Cuts. They're echoing GQ. It's the only shirt worth wearing. Let's kick off 2021 the right way, starting with your wardrobe. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
Expert insight. World-class reporting. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, January 14. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The House impeaches Trump for a second time. It's not clear if or when the Senate will receive the article for a trial. We're expected to hear Biden's plan today for speeding COVID vaccinations. Dangerous wind gusts remain in the forecast for the West and Upper Plains. Samsung widely expected to introduce its newest Galaxy smartphone today. Stocks were mostly higher. Blockbuster NBA trade sends James Harden from Houston to Brooklyn. And the young Montana girl who wrote to a cop injured in the D.C. riots. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed immediately delivers quality candidates from their resume database when you upgrade your job post. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. The U.S. economy is poised to add more jobs this year than any other on record, dating back to 1939. That's the good news. However, the expected gain is unlikely to fully replace losses last spring when the coronavirus pandemic first took hold. Insight from Eric Morath, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Eric, what's being said?
Yeah, so I spoke to a number of different economists, and several are predicting that U.S. employers could add, you know, 5 to even more than 6 million jobs in 2021, and that would place it as the best year for hiring on records that basically go all the way back to World War II. So we're in for a positive year, but some things have to break our way.
Okay, so if we're going to add that 5 to maybe 6.5 million jobs, are those good paying jobs? Are those the ones we lost in the first place, like a lot of service sector ones? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I think that predominantly the job growth is going to be in consumer facing services. So certainly restaurants, hotels, airlines, airports, but don't also forget about, you know, stadiums, museums, theaters. These are lower paying jobs, but that's in part because folks with better paying jobs were much less likely to lose their jobs in the pandemic. But, you know, I can't understate that these jobs, that's a lot of jobs. I mean, we're talking about something on the order of 10, 15, 20% of all employment is in, you know, these sort of consumer-facing service sectors.
We're speaking with Eric Marath, economics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "This Could Be the Best Year on Record for Job Growth." Anybody take a stab at the percentage of jobs that'll be never coming back, whether because of new efficiency that's been discovered or technology having replaced some workers?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the long-term expectation is that the U.S. will, you know, fully regain the employment that we had before the pandemic. It might still be yet 2 or 3 years out, but you're right. There's not going to be this exact same type of jobs. One area that's probably not fully coming back ever is sort of the mall retail type jobs. Those were already dwindling and shifting towards online sellers like Amazon. That just got accelerated. We're not going to see these national chains that file for bankruptcy come back and open hundreds of stores. And in some cases, we'll never see their names on a building again. Some other areas that there could be, you know, longer-term changes to could be jobs that are associated with, like, business travel. There could be pressure on, like, car rental companies and travel agencies, because the expectation is with Zoom calls and those types of things, there's just not going to be quite the same need for business travel, even once it's safe to do that. And another area, you know, we do expect a lot of hiring at restaurants, but we know a lot of restaurants have closed. So that means it's going to be a lot harder than just sort of saying, all right, everyone go out to eat again. Well, if there used to be 10 restaurants on Main Street, there might only be 3 or 4 when you go back to Main Street looking to have your post vaccine celebration.
Right. Does that have an outsized impact on teenagers?
Yeah, I mean, younger people have been impacted here. They're going to face, certainly have higher unemployment rates. But we're seeing it really across the spectrum because this, you know, the pandemic had different effects. You know, another spot where we see a lot of people have dropped out of the labor force is, you know, working parents, right? Or parents that were working, now they've been taking care of children and they might not be able to turn around and jump back into the workforce right away.
Yeah.
Another area is older adults, the baby boomers who, you know, did lose their jobs. Younger people lost them in larger numbers, but if you were an older worker and you did lose your job, it's hard to get back in the workforce, and maybe you figured out you applied for Social Security and you're left looking for jobs.
You did say toward the latter part of your piece, not all economists are optimistic here. Why not? What do they see as red flags?
Right. So one of the, obviously the big question is the vaccine. These economists that are predicting massive job growth are predicting that a vaccine is online and is safe by the middle of the year. So that doesn't happen if, you know, the rollout continues to be sporadic or, God forbid, it doesn't work.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Marath, economics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know there are plenty of people out there who have ridden the Bitcoin wave to digital riches, with the virtual currency now trading at a stunning $38,000 each. There's one problem with dealing with anything online, however, and that's remembering your password. That was the roadblock that a German software programmer named Stefan Thomas ran into when trying to access his digital wallet stuffed with over 7,000 bitcoins worth over $220 million.
Goodness.
According to the New York Times, Thomas stored the Bitcoins on an Iron Key hard drive in 2011. That gives users 10 guesses at the password before they are encrypted forever. So far, he's used 8 guesses. He lost the paper with the password written on it the same year he got the Bitcoins. Making matters worse for Thomas, the price of Bitcoins continues to have surged. Perhaps wisely, Thomas isn't letting himself get antsy. He's placed the hard drive in a secure facility and plans to wait until cryptographers can help him crack the code in the future. The New York Daily News says that an estimated $140 billion in Bitcoin has been lost or locked away due to forgotten passwords.
Holy cow.
I guess that's not the kind of thing that you can say, you know, forgot my password and have them send you a code or something like that. I guess, you know, something like that. It's a little more secure.
Yeah, press one. Hey, this is Tom. Can I talk to the CEO of Bitcoin? This is no such thing. Like, it's no customer service, right?
There should be some way to be able to do this, but apparently not. Obviously, he's exhausted all possibilities.
But you would think, too, it's a race against time.
Yeah.
Like, Bitcoin is so volatile. I mean, it could drop to, you know, 8,000 in the blink of an eye, as we've seen it do before. Yeah. We saw the story a couple of years ago. I guess people still haven't figured it out. You know, you got to be careful with the Bitcoin passwords.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine, though, watching it, you know, plummet one day?
Right.
You know, you're sitting there just losing millions of dollars a second while it plummets. And we know it was likely a slow, conspicuous getaway, but an attempted getaway nonetheless that was eventually thwarted by authorities. A thief who no doubt wanted to bring the party home with him was arrested after allegedly making off with a floating tiki hut in the Florida Keys yesterday. Jeez. The U.S. Coast Guard said that wildlife officers arrested an intoxicated person in a stolen tiki hut boat near Hawks Channel. The Coast Guard tweeted about the incident, which included pics of officers at the helm of the recovered hut, and the caption, "Don't drink and boat."
I'm sure they won't see me if I try to steal this floating tiki hut.
Yeah. Again, the worst part about when you're trying to steal a boat of any kind, even something like that, which has probably a tiny, tiny little motor in it, is that your getaway is like, you know, 3 and 4 miles per hour.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's very easy for everyone to see you and identify you and then track you down in a matter of minutes.
What if you blow out the torches? Are you less conspicuous then if they're not flaming anymore?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's too much. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
President bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California preferring a censure versus impeachment of President Trump. More on that in just a moment. Meanwhile, what if you're willing to be vaccinated but are afraid of needles? Addressing such fears is essential to public health, and CNN says for individuals considering avoiding a COVID-19 vaccination due to their phobia, seeking treatment could be a life and death decision. The CDC says about a quarter of adults are afraid of needles, and an estimated 7% of adults avoid immunizations because of that fear. Individuals with relatively mild fear of needles might be able to cope with their anxiety by practicing relaxation techniques. Distracting yourself can work too. CNN says counting things in your surroundings, doodling, numbering your breaths, and imagining a safe, comforting place can shift your focus away from the frightening event. Or you could invite a trusted friend or family member to join you, even if they can't accompany you all the way to the procedure room. If you need professional help, among the most popular approaches is cognitive behavioral therapy, where individuals work with providers to alter their thoughts and behaviors. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Donald Trump has become the first president to be impeached twice as 10 of his fellow Republicans join Democrats in the House to charge him with inciting an insurrection and last week's violent rampage in the Capitol. The vote was 232 to 197. Democratic Congresswoman Deborah Ross of North Carolina.
The president has had multiple opportunities to modify his behavior to bring this country together. Instead, he uses his power to further divide us. He is unrepentant.
Number two.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell rejected Democratic calls for a quick impeachment trial, saying there was no way to conclude it before Trump leaves office. But even if he has left the White House, a Senate conviction of Trump could lead to a vote on banning him from running for office again.
Number three.
In a video, President Trump called on his supporters to make their voices heard peacefully.
No true supporter of mine could ever threaten or harass their fellow Americans. If you do any of these things, you are not supporting our movement. You are attacking it, and you are attacking our country.
Two Virginia police officers, including one who bragged on social media that he didn't do anything illegal by storming the U.S. Capitol, now face Justice Department charges for their roles in the riot. Both have been charged with violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. President-elect Joe Biden is expected today to outline plans for his administration to speed vaccines to more people following major changes to the government's vaccination distribution efforts. Orange County, California Board Supervisor Andrew Doe says Disneyland is a vaccine site.
Soon, we will be able to vaccinate over 7,000 people each day just at this location.
The U.S. has reported more than 22 million cases and 378,000 deaths related to COVID-19. A rollable smartphone, transparent TV, and a $300 lipstick mixer. Those are a few of the products rolled out this week at the CES show. LG Electronics showed off a phone called the LG Rollable, whose screen can roll up to make it a tablet. It seems aimed at people who want to stream Netflix on the go, but also want a tablet that can fit in their pocket. L'Oreal has a lipstick mixer that uses artificial intelligence to identify color and mixes it at home for you.
Whoa. So it's like you have to identify what you might be doing that night. Like, it's a steakhouse, a dimly lit restaurant. Give
Maybe.
Me the appropriate lipstick.
I don't know.
Jeez. Thanks, Jen. Thanks for being with us. The video of Officer Daniel Hodges being crushed in the doorway of the U.S. Capitol by rioters last week sent shockwaves around the country. Among the people who felt devastated is 10-year-old Emma Jablonski of Billings, Montana, who watched the video on TV with her mother, Jonna. WUSA Television says to help express her feelings and send love to Mr. Hodges, both mother and daughter determined a letter would be best. Jonna said the letter is an example of how young children are also affected by the tragedy 8 days ago. She told the news outlet that she hopes people can have a little kindness in their hearts. The family's putting together a care package with all the things Montana for Officer Hodges. The police department not only gave them an address to send the letter and package, but will be mailing Emma a police badge as a token of appreciation. The D.C. Police Department responded on Twitter by thanking Emma and saying that Officer Hodges is recovering and doing well. No arrests, by the way, have been made specifically in that case. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.